Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with the industry's biggest names. I'm Alan Seals, and your guest is Anna Villafañe. She was discovered when she was still in high school in a production of Cats, was signed before her 18th birthday, moved from Miami to LA, ended up coming to New York, was scouted by Gloria Estefan, led the Broadway production of On Your Feet. Just this incredible story, and she's still so young. I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. But before we get into it, find me online on Instagram and Twitter. Leave me a rating and a review. Hit me up in your stories. Let me know you're listening. Find past episodes at thetheaterpodcast.com. And everybody, please enjoy this episode with Anna Villafañe.
Here you go. One, two, three.
Today's guest was named one of the New York Times 30 Under 30 and has been honored by the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts for trailblazing Latin representation in entertainment. She originated the role of Gloria Estefan in On Your Feet and starred in the hit musical throughout its entire run on Broadway. Her TV credits include Mozart in the Jungle, South Beach, New Amsterdam, and Younger. Among many others, she is now helping to usher in the return of Broadway, starring as Roxy Hart in Chicago, the musical. Anna Villafañe, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I was listening to you just say all those things, and I'm like, wow. It's so weird that it's true. It's like still true.
Well, let's. I think that's a great place to start. Let's dive in there, because you were discovered when you were in high school in a production of Cats, and in the today's day age of social media and whatnot. You don't hear a lot of, I was just walking down the street and this person came up to me and offered me a contract and made my career. Like, that doesn't happen anymore, but it seems like it sort of happened for you, and you're still very young in the grand terms of the business. And yes, you have done a lot and you're very fortunate. So walk me through how it all started.
I mean, wow. Well, it all started really by, I guess, me. I was a kid with like a lot of energy. And I started painting, which then I started singing. And then when you're 9 years old and can belt, like, you know, a lot, you dive into musical theater. So I did my first musical when I was 9 at a regional theater in Miami, and it was a complete, like, just after school activity. You know, some kids play soccer, some kids whatever. And so my parents had a friend who is a professional actor, and he convinced them to let me audition because he knew that I could sing. And so that was it. I kind of learned that you can become somebody else and tell these stories and embody or inhabit another human's point of view. And I just like fell in love. And that show was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And
you were Joseph, obviously.
Obviously. No, I was like in the, you know, how they have like a children's chorus.
yes, I remember.
So I was like wearing a teal t-shirt and khakis and working in fourth grade. And like my school went to see the show on a field trip. And I was like, I can get used to this. I like this. This is good. I was kind of a nerd. I was a very sick kid. So like it gave me something that for the first time, my classmates and like my peers at school would see me as something other than the sick kid or the like girl who couldn't run in PE or the girl who, you know, would miss school a lot because she was always at the doctor. And so I, found a lot of power and strength in that. And I just held on for dear life. And I think I still do. So it's that was the beginning and the end at the same time.
That's awesome. So then you continue, I guess you're continuing through middle school, high school and whatnot. And like, what was the discovery process like? Because Dolphin Entertainment.
Yes. I went to a high school that my parents made me go to. They didn't let me go to the magnet school for performing arts. And I was forced to go to this all-girl Catholic high school run by nuns, just like my sister. And I was determined regardless to keep performing. And so I would do shows in school and out of school. I remember like my mom would like shuttle me between rehearsals for the school play and like a play on the other side of town and all these things. I was a part-time student my freshman year working at the same theater where I did Joseph as a kid. So I always, like, my priorities were always already kind of falling into place. And then senior year, we didn't have a theater even in my school. We would use the cafeteria. There was like a stage in the cafeteria. It was
I had one of those.
Auditorium, if you will.
The gymnatorium, yes.
Yes, exactly. Very, very fancy. And we did an all-female production of Cats, you know, unitards and all. And I played Grisabella. And little did I know that then my first manager was in the audience, and they had me come in to audition for a Lifetime movie, and then they flew me out to LA, and I got signed immediately, and so then I moved to LA without knowing anybody on the West Coast. I was 18, and I moved over there right after high school, and I started working, and it was just like the hustle of every Taco Bell commercial. I was killed by gangs on like every procedural, or I did an America's Most Wanted episode as like one of the reenactments. I was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, doing all of the things, pretty much just trying to make it happen. And then I heard about On Your Feet. Well, I had already graduated from college. I got a degree in opera. And one of my friends, who's a news anchor in Miami, she was covering the open calls because they saw like thousands of girls around the world to find to cast the role of Gloria. And I received this phone call from my friend Laura, who was covering the auditions, and she's like, "You really need to audition for this." So I tell my then team, and they were like, "Well, you're not a Broadway girl. Like, you don't have a BFA in musical theater. People don't just roll up to Broadway auditions." I really feel like it's calling me. Like, I don't know how to explain it to you. Like, I'm not vain enough to be like, "Trust me, I'm going to get it." But I said that to them. I was like, "Get me in the room. I can't explain this to you. It's, I'm being magnetically drawn to this for some reason that is way bigger than myself." And historically, I was right, because then it was actually 7 years ago yesterday that the production flew me to New York. I auditioned exactly 7 years ago yesterday for Jerry Mitchell, had the call back exactly 7 years ago today, and got the job today, September 30th of 2014.
Wow.
My life changed.
Do you consider yourself an empath?
Oh yes, very much so. I'm like a little sponge. I feel everybody's feelings and too much. They call me my family always makes fun of me for it. I care too much about everything.
that's always been something that I personally have struggled with. And only in the last couple of years have I really been like, you know what, this gut feeling that is like nagging at me, I'm going to stop trying to analyze it because I have a highly analytical mind. And I want to stop trying to analyze it, and I want to just let the feeling happen. And that's really strange for me. And it sounds like that's exactly what happened though for you with On Your Feet. You're like, I just got to do this. I'm being pulled to do this.
Yeah, fully. And then it was the matter of diving in and trusting that I was enough, because I'm also very much an empath, but also like the imposter syndrome is very real. And I think, you know, I'm somebody who I really believe in like work ethic and all this stuff. But at the same, but it's like, who am I to be in this position, especially with when I did get On Your Feet and when I did move to New York and I didn't know anything about New York itself as a city, but also about like the ins and outs of the Broadway industry. I had a lot to learn. And like day one of rehearsal, when they're like, "Who's non-equity?" And I was like, I didn't know what that meant. So So I was just like, I'm just here because I got this job. Like, but it was like a crash course in all things Broadway and in all things legit theater and just like the ins and outs. I mean, I remember when I came to New York for the audition, Lynn had heard about me because of the On Your Feet audition. And they were casting Hamilton at the time. And I get a phone call from Brittany Telsey's office, from the casting office for On Your Feet and for mm-hmm. Hamilton. And they're like, Lynn wants to see you. And I was like, who's Lynn? And so
That little guy, he's done a few things.
Literally. And so then, I was obsessed with Be in the Heights soundtrack at the time. But again, I moved to New York in the Broadway schedule. So it's not like I didn't really grow up with like a family that came to see theater every year, you know, like it was like not the way. So I learned a lot very quickly and was expected to be a star in this, like in this community that I've always idolized and wanted to be a part of. And like, you almost don't believe that that can happen to you. And then it happens to you. And so then I cut to moving here and having this incredible fairy tale of a job and this responsibility and so much to prove as well. Cause like, you know, then you have like the feeling sometimes that who is this girl? What is she going to mm-hmm. do? Like, is she actually going to be good enough? And so it was amazing, but a literally life-changing experience.
Well, yeah, obviously. And I guess you're coming to New York for the show and not previously. I mean, I've said on the podcast so many times here that Broadway actors are the Olympians of theater.
Oh, because 100%.
you have to just throw yourself in. It's mind and body and 8 shows a week, et cetera, et cetera. So coming from LA, coming from not a rigorous performance schedule beforehand, did you struggle with the 8 show schedule, like at a basic level?
So I think because I had no point of comparison and no time to think about it, I didn't. It wasn't until 8 months into the Broadway run. So after Chicago, after everything, I didn't call out until 8 months in when I injured my voice and was just so burnt out and like, you know, firing on all cylinders. And again, the expectations and then any day off was press and all of those things. Social media had like kind of just become like a bigger deal. So like I the concept of rest was not a thing. And since I moved here for the show and didn't have other friends or anybody really to ground me or to center me, my entire life was the show. So I would be on vocal rest and then only speak pretty much either as Gloria or about playing Gloria in press. So Anna became less and less and less and less existent. And it took 8 months of that schedule and that grind for my body to kind of shut down. And psychosomatically, like my voice was just like, nope, you need to take a step back and you need to remember that Anna needs to exist in order for all of this other stuff to exist. So it's interesting now going into leading a Broadway show for the second time, but understanding that, like, and not waiting until an injury or until it gets difficult to take care of myself. So like, I'm very, very disciplined now from in a different way, not like kill yourself, run 5 miles and then go to yoga and then go to the theater and then never leave the theater and whatever. How I used to be a little neurotic, but more in a balanced way where it's like, make sure you eat, acupuncture, vocal health, like don't wait until you're injured to see an ENT or to do all these things. So I'm a lot more empowered because I know what I'm doing. But it wasn't truthfully, I always describe it as like, if I'm pouring out from myself, like if I'm a glass of water and I'm pouring out, the thing about loving what you do is that it pours back in while you're pouring out. So it's hard to tell when you're tired even because the adrenaline and the feelings and, you know, every time if I was tired or even still, and I think about if there's one person in the audience whose life you could potentially, or day you could potentially change just from doing what you're doing, and what a privilege it is to get to do what we're doing, it's that kind of regenerates the energy for me. And that's why I'm also very careful, especially as I've gotten older, what I say yes to, because I don't want to set myself up to burnout or to, you know, like I always said with On Your Feet, for example, I was singing 17 songs per show. And I was never, like, now in Chicago, there are three times in the show that I can go to the bathroom. That is wild to me, because it was like, you can't even think straight, because it was, you're on stage the entire time. I think there was one scene that I was not on stage for. So it is a little bit different and it's a little bit more balanced, but I didn't know the difference. It's almost like it's perfect for them, for producers and for the Estefans. It was kind of perfect that I had no point of comparison, because I was like, oh, this is super normal. My entire life is dedicated to them. And if I didn't love them and if I didn't love her and respect her, it wouldn't have been sustainable. Like that, one of the best lessons in my debut being On Your Feet was that it can't be about me. And so the going into it with that sense of humility, where like I am genuinely, my role is to honor this human being who then became my friend, is that kind of also added to the equation where I was able to like subtract myself enough and surrender to the show.
Did you ever talk to Gloria about what the ultimate, was there an ultimate moment where she and the other people in charge of casting were like, this is it. Like Anna is the one who's going to represent me and here's why. Because I feel like if it was, you know, if you were telling your life story, you would want the person playing you on stage to be so special.
I mean, I've never asked like what it was that made, because they have been extremely kind and generous and love, like their family, you know, and they tell the story all of the time. And so I can't even, like, I can't describe how many times we've been, whether it's in press or at work or at a dinner or like just bottles of wine deep, that we're just like hanging out somewhere and they'll just tell a story over and over about how as soon as I walked out, they all turned to each other, the entire table. It was like them in the middle and then all the producers, the entire creative team, Jerry Mitchell, Sergio Trujillo, you know, it was so scary. And they all just turned to each other and was like, "Yeah," it was apparently 100% clear. And she does mention one moment where in between scenes, I put my hair in a ponytail. And that she watched it and was like, that is the person, which I don't know, of all the things, mind you, I'm like, it wasn't my voice, it wasn't my talent, it was my ponytail. but she always talks about that. And then she did say, and she chronically for 7 years always reminds me and says that it was written in the stars. She's like, this was meant for you. And then the show closing when I said that I was going to leave was almost like validation of that.
Wow. That's so interesting. It's acting in general is very much about listening and about mm-hmm. reacting, right? So I it's interesting that it was the act of not speaking, not performing, that was the moment for her, because it was who you are. It's maybe it's like that. I go back to empath sort of thing, right? Yeah. It's just like sort of who you are spoke to who she is. And she was like, oh yeah, okay. Like there was that moment when there was no wall, when there was no performance, when there were no nerves, and like who you are just came through. Just putting up your hair. So I totally see that. I can see how that worked.
Yeah, I can too. Now that you put it that way, I can too. Because I always like laugh about it in my own mind. I do know that with Jerry, the day before, so from the initial audition, my only question was whether the songs, some of them are as a concert and some of them are true musical theater, like storytelling, to like move the book forward. So in terms of like the performance of them, and I remember him being like, that's a really smart question. And I was like, well, it completely informs how I'm going to sing these songs. Like, if anything for you is me as an actor singing anything for you, like story wise, like a musical theater, then that's one thing. But if I'm performing in a concert, that's another thing. And so, so that was the distinction that I remember was like quite a game changer in terms of the audition room itself as well.
So I'm gonna change gears slightly here, because as I'm observing you and how you're presenting yourself and talking about all these things, you've got a it's so cliche to say the old soul, right? But you've got an air of humility, I want to say, because you were saying you were belting when you were 9. You said that, and all of a sudden, you know, Grizabella and Cats, and in you're surrounded by talent. Go out to LA, still go to college, which is amazing, and then come out in and are leading a Broadway show, having almost no professional theater experience. And then you're still asking, like, well, how do I approach this? And you have the work ethic to not want to call out for 8 months and all this stuff. And so I know you're the youngest, or not youngest, you're one of four, right? You're in the middle of four siblings?
Yes, I'm the second of four.
So is it the family life that kind of instilled this attitude on you, or where do you think you get this attitude of just being like, listen, I'm here to work and I'm taking it seriously. I'm going to take myself seriously, because being who you are, most kids your age, most people your age, you're not a kid, mm-hmm. most people your age would just be like, I'm just going to go out and drink all night. Woo, I'm living in New York City, right?
I do that too. Don't worry. I think my moments. You should have seen me on Tuesday night. But I mean, I think it's a mixture of things. I definitely, you know, I won the lottery in terms of parents, grandparents, support system, family. My sister, honestly, she'll be the first one to be like, get it together, get your feet on the ground. Like, she will put me in my place fast. But also, I think culturally, there's something to that. I think the work ethic, my dad came from El Salvador when he was 16. Like, you know, when I think of like the American dream, I think of him. I think of my grandfather, who's from Cuba. And my mom, who grew up here, but always kind of yearning and representing the Cuba that will never exist anymore. I think the immigrant experience definitely informs that as well. I also just think I've always been like mischievous. Like, I love to like prove people wrong or like surprise people or even surprise myself, to be honest with you. As I've gotten older, it's less and less about other people and more about like, wait, I can do Fosse? Okay. You know what I mean? Like, so like it's fun to think outside the box of my own, I guess, limits. And then that's the last piece of the puzzle for me, again, goes back to growing up as like a sick kid. I was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis when I was 7 years old. So I was confined to a wheelchair a lot as a kid and, you know, had to be homeschooled sometimes and was hospitalized a lot. And like, there's no way that I can like approach life and just take it as like complacent, just if that makes sense. Like, so it's almost like being a performer is almost like the only option for me, because A, I get it all. I get to experience so many things, and B, it is a never-ending challenge and a never-ending kind of surprise party of a career, and that's kind of how I've always lived. Like, I've growing up with like just the set of circumstances that I grew up with. It's it has lent itself to a mentality of like perseverance and enjoying things for what they are. Also, like, yes, because hard work is important, but like at the end of the day, like, I just want to get in bed and be like proud of myself and happy.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode. There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating! So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that 5 times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, I want to acknowledge and take this opportunity for a second, because you're on stage now 8 shows a week, Roxy Hart, doing Fosse, and have this diagnosis. Was it junior rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah, rheumatoid arthritis, which might be only, and also dates me, because now they call it something else in the world of pediatric rheumatology. But yeah, I've had it since I was 7 years old. So every day, I mean, I take my medication, I give myself my injection every 10 days and we make the best of it.
Well, so what I was going to say was that not all disabilities are visible. So I want to take this opportunity for everybody listening to say, like, not everything, you can not see everything that people are going through. Do you ever, like, I was going to ask, coming back to Chicago and Roxy Hart, and you mentioned, like, oh, I'm doing Fosse now, which is amazing. In telling me about your history, dance wasn't a part of it. So how did this come about? And you were like, wait, me, Chicago? That's dancing. That's not me. Did you ever go through any of this?
So
you're like, screw it. I'm in. I'm all in. I don't care what you say.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's like I have like the soul of a dancer. so much. But like I was like, you know, I have this body that's a little faulty sometimes and whatever. And it took many years of therapy and of figuring out that I'm not this like damaged good, right? And so I always felt a freedom when it comes to music in general, right? And dance, because I came from a place as a child of like not being able-bodied all the time, I have almost like a very, very deep respect and admiration for it. That's almost like otherworldly. Like I can just watch dancers move and cry. And I do often. So I think that there's an element of that, where I just really, really appreciate movement and dance in such a deep way, because I know what it's like to not be able to use my legs or my body. And something happens, and I speak about this at like, especially I do a lot of work with the Arthritis Foundation and for kids with chronic conditions, and I meet performers and I meet their parents, and they tell me that like they've heard me say that something happens sometimes where like being another person, playing a character, going deep into the psyche of somebody else, like the escape from what it is that I was going through as a kid, especially, was a very big therapy for me and a very big healer for me. And something about when I'm singing or when I'm dancing that sometimes I like forget that I have this condition and that I have this pain or this like mobility issue. And it's something that I've found, and I want to get more into like the research of this, because I've heard other kids say that when they've heard me say that, they're like, yes. And I've had mothers cry to me and fathers and people say that, like, that they've heard their kids say that, but that they kind of like, you know, like, how do you believe that? And it's true. There is something, I think there's such a like otherworldly sanctity to the arts that can transport you and transcend reality in that way, even if it's just for a second. And dance specifically has always done that for me. And I was not a technically trained dancer, because how could I be as a kid? But I love dancing and I love music. And so for me, it started more like Latin dancing. And so when I moved to LA, I would go every single Monday night, go just social dancing. And I wasn't good. I wasn't doing all the spins. I wasn't like, you know, fancy, but I can move and I can let the moment take over me. And like from dancing with different people, I would learn more and more styles. And I actually got really good at it. Cut to On Your Feet. And I was like, oh, I can do this now. Like, and so again, one of those moments where like you're surprised by your own capacity, but then having Sergio teach me and not hold me to a lower standard because of my, you know, because of my physicality. And I was frustrated and I was like, I can't do this. And I can't compare or compete with these girls, with Nina Lafarga, Tenare Vasquez, Marielis Molina, these incredible dancers. And he was like, I am going to hold you to this standard because I know that you can. And that was Sergio. And then now having Greg Butler with Chicago, with these nuanced, different, very different type of dancing, and David Bushman, our dance captain, who was like, go take a ballet class. So I've been in bar classes. I've ordered my little ballet slippers and I can try and I can learn and I can imitate. So like, as much as I'm not a techno dancer and I don't know all the terms and I can't spin and whatever, give me the time and I will put it in. Like, I will find a way to do it. And they've given me the opportunity and the tools that I needed. So it's been really, really special, to be honest with you.
That's so much fun. I enjoy hearing stories about how the arts are like transporting. And I've said at the beginning of the pandemic, like, we need to bring the arts back because the arts can heal, and they are a unification factor. And there's so much that happens. It's kind of funny that when all the essential workers, right? What's the first thing everybody did when we were locked up in quarantine? We went to TV and movies and music and artists, actors. Yeah. And then yet the arts and the artists were the last ones to be recognized as essential workers, if they even still are. But that's just my soapbox.
Well, what you think about the fact that the art form itself, like let's just even say theater, has been around for ever, you know, like, and there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like, we wouldn't still be here talking about this if it weren't integral, in my opinion, to the very fabric and fiber of society.
You know, what's very timely that you bring this up is, do you know who Ben Folds is?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. So Ben Folds has a podcast called Lightning Bugs, and one of his recent interviews I was listening to with Bill Shatner, William Shatner, and the both of them, highly philosophical, deep thinking kind of guys, and Bill says, like, so think about who created music. How was music created? Like, someone had to invent instruments. And realize that you can put a reed in something and it vibrates and makes a noise. And like, I'm going to kill this cat and take its gut out and make a cat gut instrument. And there's people, like, where did this all come from? There is an inherent need in our brains to tell stories. And then someone at some point said, let's put this to music. But what is music? Okay, let's invent this thing and call it music.
Yeah. I think that kind of stuff all the time.
Do you really?
Yes. Because I think about it, I'm like, why am I not thinking to myself, oh, why don't I blow into this random thing and see if it makes a cute sound? I don't invent a musical instrument, like strumming. Who thought to put strings on something with a hole? You know what I mean? Like, there are mm-hmm. so incredible.
Yeah, it's just the conversation they were going down. It's so much fun because they were like, well, what was the first instrument? Do you think it was like people doing vocalizations? Was it a cappella? Was it singing? Was it percussion? It was probably a little bit of percussion and everything because it's easy to bang on things.
Yeah.
You can bang rocks together, bang sticks together, and all of a sudden you've got a rhythm. And yeah, that conversation was fascinating to me. I love that I'm not alone in this way of thinking.
No, you're super alone. Yeah.
But then the ability to tell stories actually... when you're listening to a story, like right now we're looking at each other, you're leaning in, there's body language, there's a physical interest in a conversation. And when you're telling a story, when you're listening and engaged in a conversation and listening to a story, there's chemicals released, the happy chemicals, that make you bonded to that story and bonded to the group and bonded to everybody telling the story. And so that's why I've said it before that I think there's an amount of a light trauma that you go through to put up a show, especially a Broadway show, because it's long hours and it's hard and it's strenuous and you might be emotionally tired because of imposter syndrome or nervous for opening night or whatever the case is. You could have stage fright, you could have panic attacks in the middle of your solo. This happens to everybody, and all of this bonds you to your casts and bonds you to the stories and then overall bonds you to the art form. All at the same time, you are presenting, you and your cast as a unified entity are presenting this to a room of strangers, taking them on a journey they didn't know they needed to go on.
Yeah, correct, correct.
So when you are on stage now, I mean, so you've got kind of, two sides of the same coin. So you've led a show that was an original, and now you're coming into Chicago, which is a staple of American theater.
Literally.
International theater, too.
Yeah.
So are you approaching Roxy differently? I guess because Chicago was already a well-oiled machine.
Right.
How was this experience different from your previous experiences?
Well, it's different because I was starting new where most of the company is not. There are four of us who started new, and who have been added into the pre-existing just alchemy of the group, right? So like we have like our like little group text. Like we call ourselves the new kids on the block. And I'll be like, we need a meeting, or like on Sunday nights before the final show, we'll like have some champagne. But so that's been interesting because like you want to fit in, but you also want to bring what you are bringing to the table. And respectfully and without stepping on anybody's toes, and you're learning the politics and all the personalities and whatever. And also again, as an empath, these are people who were forced to leave their job for so many months that for me, it felt like a calling to be a grounding, or at least to help ground the experience, because I didn't have a pre-existing relationship with the space and with the theater. I have it with like the concept of any theater. So like, yes, I wept when I got on stage the first day, but it wasn't because there's memories attached to it or because it felt mine in any way. I very much felt like a guest at like a very important moment. Like if, you know, somebody invites you to their house for Thanksgiving, that like you want to bring a gift and you want to be respectful, but you also want to eat, you know? and so it's interesting to be, especially I take very seriously the idea of like of leadership within these very beautiful families that get built for a show. And I think that comes from Jerry, actually, because when we started On Your Feet, we were out drunk one night in Chicago during our out of town. And he said to me, he's like, the fish rots from the head down.
Mm-hmm.
You are going into something where it's not just about the notes. It's not about the choreography. It's not about 5, 6, 7, 8. It's not about the lines. It's not about the press. It's not about a red carpet. It's about the group. And you just remember that standing at zero comes with its own different set of responsibilities. And I took that to heart because he's a great leader. And so I was like, well, I want to make sure that I do that justice as well. So I'm applying that more than anything to Chicago right now, because these are people who are, I mean, so well established in this industry, people who are so incredibly talented, people who are older than me, people who have families and kids and you know, and who have been with the show, some of them for like 10 years. And there's such a rich history to that. And I respect that because I understand what it's like to be with a show for a long time. I understand what it's like to, like, for that to be kind of your life, right? So coming in new, it's given me the opportunity of, with my own freshness and my own perspective and my own energy, to help facilitate them coming back to work. Like, that for me has been like a big part of the puzzle, because I can understand, listen, if On Your Feet had still been running and the shutdown had happened, I would have been inconsolable. Inconsolable. Like, I would have been a mess during this entire pandemic situation. So I know what that's like, or I can at least imagine what that's like. And so being part of it, and from, again, a leadership position, but being new, it's that negotiation of like, you tell me, I am the new one, but I'm also going to show up.
Is there any amount of what am I doing here that's going through your mind too? Because there are so many people that have been part of this legacy, and now you are the latest to add your mark on the legacy that is this show. Like, this is Broadway. This is the pinnacle. So you are playing a lead of a staple that has had so many amazing people come before you. You know, how often do you look back and you're like, holy shit, look at where I'm standing?
I mean, at least once a day. The word is not even superstitious, just I would say aware. And like, even in my dressing room, like, there are moments, like, it sounds super weird and like hippie or whatever, but like, I will thank Anne Rankine when I leave. Everything is the shoulders we stand on, right? And mm-hmm. I attribute a lot of my outlook on that stuff to Andrea Burns, who played my mom in On Your Feet. Like, she was always very, very, a very good mentor in terms of like that mentality of like respecting the shoulders we stand on. And I am a product of that. And I know that. I mean, look, I'm standing next to Bianca Marroquin playing Velma, who played Roxy for like 20 years off and on. And because she did what she did, I can do what I'm doing, because I know that, you know what I mean? And again, it goes back to even the Gloria of it all. Like, it really takes away from the ego when you can look around and say, look at all of the people that had to do this before I get to. Mm-hmm. And like, kind of giving homage to that, and then letting that be part of where I get even the energy. Because it's like, all of their work allowed me to even think about dreaming about this. Like, even the 10-year-old girl, the 9-year-old girl doing musicals in Miami, that is all because of all of these people who have done it first. So it exists for me because they made it. And so now it's kind of like my turn to make it exist for other people.
I love that. And in addition to all of this, you're still doing TV projects, because... Yeah. It was announced recently that you're going to be in the remake of Night Court.
This is true.
Which, which I want to touch on before we wrap up, because I watched Night Court when I was a kid. I watched the original.
Well, yeah, of course.
I watched reruns of the original.
Right.
I'm not that old. And first of all, I didn't know that they were bringing that back. So amazing. I can't wait for that. But when does that start? Are you going to be able to juggle both theater and the TV filming?
Oh, yes. That is very much the plan. It is kind of amazing to be able to be at a point right now where, again, right when I got back from shooting Night Court was when I got the offer for Chicago. So it's like very, very...
It's already shot.
Huh?
It's already in the can?
Well, the pilot.
Okay.
Right, which was shot in July. And it's wild because John Larroquette, he's coming back to the show. Like his character, because it's not a reboot, it's technically like a sequel. Mm-hmm. And he, the first day that we met when we were on set on the Warner Brothers lot, he was like, we had like some downtime and I was so starstruck. Mostly because of the movie Richie Rich, mind you, because he played the villain in Richie Rich. but I was like, I didn't know what to say to him. He's this like icon. And he turns to me, he's like, where did you live when you were on Broadway? And I was like, I cannot believe that I have that in common with this man, first of all. Like, it all the walls kind of came down. And I was like, I felt so like validated and seen. I was like, first of all, why do you know that I was on Broadway? Why do you know anything about me? And second of all, yeah, no, I lived in Midtown. Like we were just like talking about our experiences on Broadway and like what an incredible truth. Like how, like I think about my life and like to your point, even a little bit ago, like it is very, I'm still like excited that this is all happening. I hope I never get to the point where I'm just like, oh, well, you know, just another day in the life. Like, I'm still like, oh, yeah, we got into the club. Like, you know what I mean? So it's all very exciting. And just, like, to be able to say that, yes, I'm, first of all, starring in my second Broadway show, which in and of itself would have been enough. The first time would have been enough. And then to also have all these other projects and all these other things that I can't even talk about yet that are happening and that are real. And it is very, very much a humility pill, but also like a gratitude pill, because I keep surprising myself, I guess. And that feels good.
It's very, very, very yes. And
yes,
take what comes at you.
Yes. Exactly.
Take what comes at you and do it to the best you can, and then people are going to notice. And the advice I always give when asked is be the person people want to work with the next time.
That is a fact. This is such an understanding. Like, that is, it's almost not talked about enough. Like, people want to work with people that they want to work with. Like, and if you're not good in the room, it doesn't matter if you can belt a high Z. Like, that's not the important part. The important part is that we have to be in it together when you're in a studio, when you're on stage, because things happen. And like Lilias White recently started in her announcement at the top of act two, because like Mama kind of like re-announces that the show is back and we need to kind of like hush in their seats. And so she's added, turn off your cell phones and like stuff like that. Like, you know, like it is a very human industry, and I think gone are the days where like the stars act a certain way and have this mystique and like this air of just like, I don't know, ego and whatnot. Like it's not like that. And more you're seeing the emphasis be on the whole human, and that's what gets the job. And that's what secures also your career, because you can get a job and then never work again if you have a bad reputation or if you like, you know, we're like a pain in the ass to work with or whatever. So it really is the whole human.
Do you think that's because of the accessibility of social media? Or is it something else?
I think there's more accountability for sure due to social media. I recently got an email. In fact, when it was announced that I booked Chicago, I got an email from a producer who I've never worked with, but who, you know, is an acquaintance, like a work acquaintance through the world of it all when you go to these events and you see the same people and whatnot. And then I did a reading with this producer, I want to say in 2019. And it was great, whatever, it was a play. And he sent me this email that was so bizarre and congratulating me on the role, but then going into how, like, he's the one that made the phone call for me to do that reading, and that he didn't feel like I was showing enough gratitude or that I should have been a little bit more grateful. I'm like, first of all, my gratitude is, I was grateful, but I also, the best way for any actor to be grateful is to show up on time, show up with integrity, show up prepared, do their job. But I don't owe you anything else. I don't owe you to go to drinks. I don't owe you to go to dinner. I do not owe you anything other than doing my job. And your job is to make phone calls. So if you're upset that I didn't do enough to thank you, you are part of the problem. Mm. You know what I mean? And so it's interesting because I think more and more accountability is really important. And I think more and more people are respecting themselves and demanding respect from employers. You know, you look at Hamilton, the cast making sure that they were getting compensated for their work. You look at all these reforms that I hope are really going to land in terms of representation, in terms of just the whole the show must go on mentality. I'm very, very proud because the Weislers have been listening. We had breaking bias workshops during the rehearsal process for Chicago before reopening. Nice. We had a workshop where producers wanted to listen to past and present cast company members on how they can do better. And one of the biggest things was like the work-life balance and whatnot. So I'm watching these changes happen in real time. And I'm watching people really try to be the best that they can be. And I think that's huge. And I think that that's the only way that we can move forward, right? Like there's no going back to normal. There's not even a new normal. It's just, we have to keep evolving. Otherwise, we're staying stagnant and there's no growth. Like, I think that as an industry, as we individually do that, we are also collectively doing that. And I'm proud to say that I am actually noticeably, like, seeing some noticeable differences.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of the mic dropping. Yes.
Yes.
And on that, let's wrap up with the three standard closing questions I ask everybody. The first one, just very simply, is what motivates you?
Purpose.
Ooh, I like that. Like you said it too. It's very introspective. What advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
Trust. You don't always see from the beginning why something is happening or how something is happening, but the clarity on the other side, I would tell myself to just trust a little bit more, because I think there's a lot of time and energy that I spent with a lot of anxiety, and which is warranted and human and fair. But yeah, just to trust.
Mm. Last question then, hardest one. If you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I mean, I'm on such a Hadestown train right now. I'm obsessed with Hadestown. I think it's my favorite show after Rent. I guess I would say Hadestown.
Beautiful show.
Oh, it's so good. I want to see it again. I have to text Ava because I really, really want to go following week. But yeah.
Mm, okay. So where can we find you online on social media?
Social media. So on Twitter, I'm at Anna V, AnnaVeeE. And then I forget I have a Twitter, like until like 2 a.m. And I just have so many drafts.
Things you wanted to say one day.
Why would I say that publicly? But just all these things. Like, for example, last night I drafted a tweet that I did not send, because I was laying in bed and it was 2 a.m. and I couldn't fall asleep. And I was just thinking about the fact that my dad growing up in El Salvador had a pet raccoon named Ringo Starr. But that's what I was thinking about. So anyway, so that's Twitter.
You should make your Twitter feed just like, here's what I'm thinking right now. That's just that's your profile, Brio. It's just, all this is what I'm thinking right now. Just non sequiturs, random thoughts.
Yes, yes. And then on Instagram, Anna Biafani Official. And I don't know that I want to teach myself another app. So I don't know about TikTok, to be honest with you. I'm like, girl, leave that to the children.
Leave that to the young ones. I'm not on TikTok. I don't know. All right. You can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at theater_podcast. Facebook.com/officialtheaterpodcast. Please leave a rating and a review wherever you are listening. This has been edited by Well-Rounded Hoodlum Productions. Thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music. And thank you to Anna for the lovely conversation.
Thank you.
Breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.